The following podcast is sponsored by SuperheroStuff.com.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of H2O. Jason Hunt here, sitting along with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we are going into the trailer park tonight because we're going to talk several different trailers, because last weekend, or over the last few days,
oh yeah,
we got hit with several.
Oh yeah. Some, and for the big films, for the films everyone's like, huh?
Yeah.
We're so excited.
Is it Christmas?
Yeah, exactly. The big one, of course, Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that one. We'll talk about Jurassic World.
Yes.
Got a new trailer that came out. Fantastic Four
mm-hmm.
has a new trailer out.
One that actually gives you a sense of the film, which is,
Little bit. Yeah. And then, there it is. And then, what was the other one we were talking about?
Batman versus Superman?
Batman 5 Superman.
Yeah.
And
hey, actually, if you see the South American...
The one from Brazil?
Yeah, it actually says Batman versus. It's actually VS. So it's like...
Well, and I think there's a specific reason for that. And I can't remember what exactly it was. I was seeing something in a comment thread. And I was just glancing through it, and I can't remember what I saw, but I think there's a reason why it's called, why they're using versus, because I don't think anybody outside the United States knows what the abbreviation V.
Probably not. Well, yeah, there's always that interesting translation between anytime you translate anything into another language. I can't remember what, there was an article I saw a long time ago, which was like all the different bizarre names that American films have been translated into. It's just like, wow,
well,
okay.
even Avengers got that treatment in England.
Right.
Because it was called Avengers Assemble in England.
Right, because of course.
Because of the Avengers.
Right.
They're not the real Avengers.
I don't see Jonathan Steed anywhere.
Wouldn't that be fun if he showed up there?
What kind of film is this?
Did you see that? Did you see Downey walking out of that interview?
I heard about that. I haven't seen it yet, no.
Yeah, they're making it out to be a lot more than it is. As far as, fussy, prissy actor type. And it's like, no, the guy asking the questions was stupid. So I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point. Okay, which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, I think we should probably talk about the Star Wars one first.
Okay.
Because the Star Wars one is wow. So I watched that trailer for the first time, and I was watching it on my phone, which is not my preferred way to watch anything.
You should never watch anything for the first time.
Oh God, I know.
Not like,
but
that.
It had come out, and it was now.
Still.
It was now. I had to watch it now. I was like, I'm going to wait 4 hours till I get home and watch it on my giant computer screen. Yes, I should have done that, but I didn't. And I still managed to tear up at the
I did too.
Get the I catch in too. My throat. Because as we have, if those of you have heard us before speak of these things, we are of an age...
We're first generation.
And I think that really becomes a, there's something about that, catching that emotion and that feeling again, that you don't expect after a certain point. You were 7 years old when you saw it. You were, 7 or 8 years old, and you're almost 45, and there's a part of you that sits there and goes, there is no way in hell I am ever going to have that kind of feeling again. Because you're grown up, and there's something
cynical.
Or if nothing else, you know that when you're a child, there's a sense of wonder that comes built in. You know,
right?
I mean, you're there's so many things you still haven't seen but exposed to that every you had those great moments of this is new, and as an adult you've seen this stuff before. Oh, space film, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there were three Star Wars films I'm not a huge fan of. Oh, okay, whatever. Ewan McGregor does a great Anthony Kiedis impression. Okay, that's nice. The special effects, it's very pretty CG. That's nice.
Yeah.
And so you've got this sort of, you know, this barrier of just. Expectation, self-preservation, and then you get these moments, and you're like, "Oh, that's what it feels like." That's what it feels like.
The moment for me when in the new trailer when the Millennium Falcon goes into the engine core,
mm-hmm.
and the TIE fighter goes afterwards and is firing on it, and then you see the shot of the Falcon swooping and diving and going up and down the obstacles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just before the explosion, I looked at that and I went, "That's Empire," or no, that's Jedi. That's when the Falcon went into the Death Star.
Mm-hmm.
It visually, it really plays to that. And then when you hear Chewie, "We're home," and there's I will admit to tearing up. But let's start at the beginning.
Sure.
Of that trailer, because there's a lot to parse.
Oh, there is. There really, really is.
The first image, of course, we see. Probably takes place after the shot. We've seen the shot in the teaser where Daisy Ridley's character gets on the popsicle speeder,
mm-hmm.
and shoots off. And now we see her, we assume it's her, going along the desert. There's an old-style X-Wing crashed in the ground. And behind it is a Star Destroyer,
mm-hmm.
crashed in the ground.
Yeah.
They stole my idea. I have an idea for a Star Wars fan film that I was going to get Tom to be a part of.
Yeah.
And my opening shot was a ruined Hulk Star Destroyer. Granted, mine was going to be in space. I didn't think about, you know, crashing it into the ground. But, you know, your opening shot, and I tell you what, they'd better open with a Star Destroyer. If Abrams knows anything about anything, his first shot has got to be a Star Destroyer.
Well, I think a lot of people are looking at this trailer and going, "Okay,
yeah.
I think maybe we're not as concerned." I don't know. It's okay. Just keep going.
So we have the Star Destroyer buried in the sand. Now, of course, everybody is assuming that this desert planet was Tatooine, but it's not.
Abrams said
it's a planet called mm-hmm. Jakku.
Mm-hmm.
So. However long it's been, there was obviously a battle, and the Empire may have lost. It's an assumption that we can make, given the fact that the Star Destroyer is down.
Mm-hmm.
I think what makes that shot work really well for me is when it goes to black, there's that little ping on the piano.
Mm-hmm.
There's something there that just... And again, this goes back to 1977, when I was in the movie theater, and that music, you know, John Williams' music hit for the first time, that was, for me, an eye-opener. I think that was the first time I realized just how much music could make a difference.
Oh, yeah.
In a film. And, you know, that's just one of those things where you're like, "Oh, now I get it." And I was pursuing. I did study music a little bit more aggressively after that. Although I still didn't enjoy my piano lessons. Sorry, Mrs. Harvey.
Probably no
my
relation.
My piano's teacher's name was Mrs. Harvey. No, probably no relation. So the next shot is the burned out Hulk husk of Darth Vader's helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know who has it. It looks like it's been retrieved from Endor and is sitting in some sort of a box in some sort of a room. And then we have, on a fiery planet, that's the assumption. People are saying, "Oh, he's on Mustafar." We see embers flying. It could very well be just a fire.
Right.
Like a bonfire or a funeral pyre or something burning. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's on a lava planet. But we see R2-D2. We see a figure in a hood. Reaches out. Looks like he's wearing a white jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the mechanical right hand. So the assumption is that it's Luke. Doesn't necessarily mean that it is Luke, but that's the assumption.
And it's a fairly good assumption, I think. I think it's the implication is very strong.
And if it goes with any of the rumors that Luke is somewhere guarding a Sith burial plot, then maybe. And then we have someone, looks like a child, a small person, handing a lightsaber to another woman, both female. And it could be Daisy Ridley handing the lightsaber to Carrie Fisher. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
If it fit, because you know, that would fit some of the rumors that we've been hearing about what happens with that lightsaber. But it's also Luke's original lightsaber from Star Wars, the one that he lost in Bespin.
Right.
Which does add a little bit of credibility to the rumor that his hand and his lightsaber has been found somehow, which to me still, you'd better do a lot of hand-wavium logic with that to make it work, because it disappeared at Bespin.
Right.
And we never saw it go anywhere past the big shaft they were in. So it could have been sucked down into one of those tunnels the way Luke was. That's possible.
Sure.
Maybe.
There's a lot of different ways you could end up with having that get the point of where it was.
I just don't want that to be a logic hang-up for people. When they start watching this movie, they go, hang on, how did they get that? I don't want that to happen. But it does look like somebody is handing this lightsaber to Leia.
Right.
That's what it looks like to me. And then we have a shot of words that say, this Christmas. Which I thought was really interesting that they say this Christmas, not this December. Because it's like you said, it's Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a Christmas present from Lucasfilm.
I don't think there's the slightest bit of...
Nothing accidental in this.
No, it's completely very much all that.
Then we have another shot. Then we have a shot of the X-Wings flying over the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different shot from what we saw in the teaser.
Right.
It looks like it's all part of that same sequence, though. It's the same planet. And then we have Oscar Isaac's character, Poe Dameron.
Right.
Apparently very excited to be flying an X-Wing.
I would imagine. I would be, too.
And there is rumor that the crashed X-Wing at the beginning of this trailer... was his.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe he's finally back in an X-Wing?
Maybe.
And then we get our first look at our villain.
Yes.
With the weird lightsaber that everybody hates.
Or they
really
love
cool
it.
Yeah,
yeah. So
there's no middle ground with this.
There really isn't.
Now, I was talking to one of our on-again, off-again contributors, Jennifer Wise, was talking about. She doesn't care for the cross-saber. Mm. It's bothering her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for a lot of people, the fact that there's no protection there, there's no cross-guard or anything, that's keeping you from slicing yourself, I guess,
When you are... strong with the power of the dark side, you don't care. Or maybe you like to cut yourself.
Yeah.
Although, I hate to say this, because especially how excited we are about this. The fine folks over at Cracked wrote an article about why the Jedi would be the villains in any other series.
Right.
Because it's like, okay, well, think about all the things. These are not good people. I was reading this going, this is... Do not stare directly at the plot. Do not stare directly at the mythology of anything. Really, you can't do it.
Although, I think the Jedi that we saw in the first trilogy, the original trilogy,
Mm-hmm.
The whole concept of Jedi then.
Oh yeah.
Is much different.
Oh yes, once
the concept of Jedi in the prequels.
Once the significant chunk of the problem lies with the prequels, because they just ultimately become some of the most irresponsible, not remotely noble creatures that we were implied that they were in the first three.
Yeah.
But one of the major concerns they actually did, Duke does come out of the first film, which is, wait a minute, if you can control minds that well,
mm-hmm.
wait a minute, hang on.
Yeah.
But well, anyway.
and you know, you've got our villain that everybody thinks Adam Driver is playing.
Right.
Although really the only photos that we've seen so far of him have been... sneaky drone photos, and he's wearing an X-Wing pilot outfit.
Right.
What's the villain's name again?
Oh, goodness.
You look that up.
I looked that up.
And he's swinging his fancy saber, and then the next shot we see is Rey and Finn.
Mm-hmm.
This is Daisy Ridley and John Boyega's characters, respectively, running away rather exuberantly. Running away from a massive explosion, and there's a TIE fighter. And some of you may not have seen this. There's a TIE fighter in the background of that shot.
Mm-hmm.
So this looks like a TIE fighter bombardment of some sort. So
I'd be running too.
That could be connected to the chase, the TIE fighters chasing the Millennium Falcon. And behind Rey and Finn is BB-8. Now, did you see the panel?
Oh,
on
yeah.
Thursday at Celebration, when they rolled BB-8 out onto stage.
It's a real thing.
He's practical. I
That's
couldn't believe
amazing.
It. Because the assumption when the teaser came out was that he was CGI.
Sure.
And Twitter just blew up when he rolled out on stage. And everybody was so excited that he was real. It was practical. That it was a physical thing that was sitting there and taking mm-hmm. up space in the same space as everybody else. And the enthusiastic reaction that Abrams got when he said, you know, it's kind of better for the actors if everything's there for
yeah.
them to interact
yeah.
with.
Well, and say what you will about Abrams' Star Trek movies. You can tell...
Not in polite company.
wait a minute. Polite company. He spent a lot of time building very big practical sets. For that,
yeah.
I mean, he built a space for that new Enterprise, right? And so whether you not, I mean, that there's the only, and of course, I think he stumbled very poorly with the engine room of brewing.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that he sat there and set out and goes, well, I'm going to make this giant starship and it's going to feel like you're there. You're not going to keep running up the same hallways. Like, you know, you're going to, here's the place and here's the other place and you're going to know that. And there is something that you can't, as much as CG is amazing and you can do all this great stuff with it, and it has opened up the possibilities for storytelling in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing beats having something in front of you. You've seen the stills from the filming of Deadpool, right?
Some of them, yeah.
Okay, where you see Ryan Reynolds in costume up against the guy with all this, he's standing there with all the motion capture dots on
right.
him, and it's like,
yep.
It's like, you know, people are going, does he get to fight motion capture man? Yes! I would pay money to see him fight. If that's the real thing, that would be great.
Even Age of Ultron, James Spader talks about being there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's wearing a motion capture suit, and it's got a pole coming out of the backpack that he's wearing. And the pole goes up to the top, a couple of red lights for everybody's eye line.
Right.
Because Ultron is so much bigger. And he said, you just do it. You just go in, and you got microphones that are picking up his voice, and he's got all this motion capture stuff all over him and the tracking dots and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But it does lend itself to a better performance all the way around when you are actually able to physically interact with every element of the scene.
Oh, sure.
And I'm glad to see that Abrams understands that. And Joss Whedon, of course, is somebody else who does. But then we've got our people out there who say, oh, it's just, you know, these young people trying to copy Spielberg and copy Lucas and, you know, Abrams is a hack and whatnot. And for all of the flaws that I think Abrams has as a filmmaker, this one does look like he got it right. And I have to wonder if some of that is because he's got Kathleen Kennedy sitting there going, JJ.
Well, JJ, you know, I think Kathleen Kennedy is a really strong advocate for the way Star Wars is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But I think we also, I think one of the criticisms that people leveled against J.J. Abrams for the Star Trek films is that J.J. Abrams has always been very, very clear he's a Star Wars fan.
Right.
And
a lot of people say that those two Star Trek films were his warm-up to Star Wars.
And you could argue that. But I think that I've actually enjoyed a lot of J.J. Abrams' work. Okay, the Star Trek films are lower on the totem pole. Just because I've got expectations for the Star Trek films, right? That I'm not gonna, you know, that are gonna be hard to meet in any event. Doesn't matter who, you know. I'm excited about Simon Pegg being one of the writers on the new film, and the fact that it's actually got the new title that was released today or yesterday.
Yeah, Star Trek Beyond.
Hey, you know what? I'll take it. It sounds like they're going out as opposed to let's hang around Earth for a while and blow something up.
Well, yeah, they are going on, but it's a stupid title.
You know, stupid titles about
my opinion, my two cents.
Well, and you know, there should be a colon there. put a colon. It's okay to use punctuation. I swear to God, Paramount, it really is okay to use punctuation.
Paramount has a colon problem.
Okay.
And that could work four or five different ways.
I was going to say, and folks, you know by now the jokes don't get any better than this. But
they don't.
But so I don't have that kind of J.J. Abrams as a hack mentality. I've enjoyed a lot of the stuff that he's created, and you and I know how hard it is to make a film, and you and I know how hard it is to make a film. Actually, we do because we made a Lovecraft film. Yeah. You know how hard it is to play in the sandbox that a lot of people care about. And so you know, are the Star Trek movies what I want? Nope, not really.
Nope.
If someone were to give me a chance to make a Star Trek film as big a fan as I am, or direct a Doctor Who episode, if I was in charge of bringing back Star Trek or Doctor Who after it had been away for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I think the level of pressure, and you're a fan, your level of excitement, your desire to get it right,
mm-hmm.
because you have that same kind of emotional feeling that we're talking about, that same kind of, you know, that catch in the throat, the eyes get wide, you suck in the air in a way that you don't, you know, when you're almost in a sense of awe, and then you hear, you know, just the right words at just the right time to make you sit there and go, I'm a child again. So,
yeah.
So I think J, you know, I'm actually really pretty excited about J.J. Abrams directing this, because I think the feel is there, and I think he's clearly aware of the weight that is resting on his shoulders in a way that I don't think he was able to, because he didn't live in that world. He didn't have that for Star Trek.
Yeah,
and that's not a fault on him. The studio asked him to do the job, and he sat there and went, okay, sure. This sounds like a cool place to play. But he didn't have that emotional connection that I think for these big kind of stories like this, where you've got, you know, it's not like Mission Impossible. When he directed Mission Impossible 3, he got it.
Yeah.
But Mission Impossible doesn't have that emotional.
No, it's just another spy thriller. It's James Bond-ish.
Yeah. But it doesn't have.
You're playing in that same realm.
Right. But we, of course, speaking of James Bond, when we brought back, when Daniel Craig took over the part, and they basically rebooted the entire series, and in a way, it really was a real reboot.
Yeah, it was.
With Casino Royale. Everybody sat there and went, No, blonde James Bond, you're ruining everything. This is why we can't have nice things. This is why I drink. Ah, la, la.
Yeah.
And then Casino Royale came out, and everyone sat there and went,
oh.
You know, oh, okay. And so, clearly, everyone's outrage about everything that is outrageable, yeah, is valid.
Sure. So we have
welcome to the internet.
Our next shot. Our next shot is Kylo Ren, our villain.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I found that too. We didn't actually get around. Yes.
Kylo Ren, the villain, who's still got the lightsaber. In the background of this particular shot, we have stormtroopers. We have flames. It looks like it's
really
part
good,
of
really good views of the new stormtrooper uniforms in this trailer.
Yeah, and then we have a shot of the stormtroopers, this giant group, and the assumption here is that they're on Hoth, that they've taken over the old rebel base on Hoth, Echo Base. I don't know if any of that, if there's anything to that or not, but you'll notice a couple of things that I found interesting here. You have a different logo, a different symbol for the Empire. They're now being called the First Order, not the Empire. Because the descriptions of these stormtroopers, I guess from toys or packaging or something, has them labeled as First Order stormtroopers.
Interesting. Okay.
Not Empire, not Imperial. And then we have in the background, up on a balcony, somebody is standing up there. Almost like they're in charge, but you can't tell who it is.
Right.
Male or female or anything, just dressed in a black robe. We don't know who it is. Then we have a shot of Daisy Ridley looking rather pensive and sweaty. Little ringlet, piece of hair out of place. And she's looking up at someone or something or something. Right. And then we have the action sequence that comes in. We have two TIE fighters that are not your normal TIE fighter.
The color scheme the black, is a little different,
The new TIE fighters, the wing panels are black, are white, and the TIE fighter itself is black, the ball in the middle. Then we have a TIE fighter blasting a hangar of TIE fighters, and bodies are flying, and lasers are going, and explosions, it's like, this is kind of cool. And, of course, everybody's like, well, is that Finn in the TIE fighter?
Right.
Because the next shot is him removing his helmet.
Because one of the speculation story things is that, of course, he was involved. His character is involved with a massacre.
Right.
And
this lends itself
right
to that, because if Kylo Ren, if the earlier shot is that massacre, and then Finn decides he doesn't want to be part of this massacre, he blasts everything out. He leaves in the TIE fighter. The TIE fighter crashes on Jakku,
right,
which is where Rey finds him. And of course, that's all speculation at this point.
Right.
Really cool looking Star Destroyer.
Oh yeah,
and some shuttles and some ships that apparently are taken out of either one of the video games or something in the EU, because people are recognizing it. They're posting it's like, "Oh, this is that thing. This is that."
Well, you know, and I think that it's with everybody being as concerned as they were that the EU was completely going away. I don't think it probably did. I think
there's going to be pieces.
There's going to be pieces that we're going to get.
I hope Mara Jade's part of that.
I would like that too. Such a great character.
Yes. Our next shot is the Chrome Trooper. That might or might not be Captain Phasma, Gwendolyn Christie's character.
Right.
That's the assumption at this point. That's the rumor.
Mm-hmm.
And we do know that she's playing Finn's commanding officer. So it's entirely possible that the Chrome Troopers are the officer corps.
Right.
And the regular Stormtroopers are just grunts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I can take that.
Sure.
I can buy that. And then we have BB-8.
Yeah.
Peeking around a corner. And wait, what? Where is he? What? That's the Millennium Falcon.
That looks like a great deal like the Millennium Falcon indeed.
Okay, so now we've seen BB-8 in the company of Rey and Finn. We have a rumor that Rey and Finn somehow are in possession of the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
and use said Millennium Falcon to bring Luke's lightsaber back to Leia.
Mm-hmm.
This shot of BB-8 on the Millennium Falcon kind of plays toward that.
It does, but again, we're in such a rumor category here. That...
Yeah, yeah. And then we have Rey and Finn, I guess, meeting for the first time, maybe? She's giving him a hand up from whatever disaster has just befallen him. But sure. He's in civilian clothing now, so probably later after he crashes onto the planet.
Sure.
And then we have TIE fighters chasing the Millennium Falcon some more. It dives into the... What everybody see, and I don't see it, but everybody sees this and they go, oh, that's an upside down Superstar Destroyer.
See, it's hard to tell because you're looking at an engine. You're just looking at engines there. And it could be a Star Destroyer. So it could also be just a completely different ship.
If it's a Superstar Destroyer, mm-hmm. then it's not the same ship we saw at the beginning.
True.
And if it's the desert, where I'm assuming we're going to be on Jakku for this, because if Rey and Finn actually do have the Millennium Falcon, then here's the desert planet, then this chase is taking place over Jakku, and it's combined, sure. it's connected to the bombardment.
Right.
Okay, fine. Well, then if that's the case, then you've got more than one Star Destroyer crashed on this planet.
Which would be one amazing visual.
Wouldn't it, though? Then we get a shot of the new
And probably really bad for a planet.
Yeah.
I mean, well, they're not small vessels.
And there's a little bit online for that because DICE has some information on the backstory of Jakku
mm-hmm.
for the video game, for the new Battlefront video game. But I get to that in a minute. So we've got our chase through the engine core that looks almost identical to the Jedi shots.
Sure.
And then our payoff, our emotional payoff. Chewie, we're home, and they're in the Millennium Falcon. Now, this lines up with the rumors that they have been on a Star Destroyer or a Super Star Destroyer or something. They have not been on the Millennium Falcon
right.
for however long. And here they are, and that's the last shot, and we see the logo and everything else. And all is right with the world.
No, we did not actually talk about the fact that...
We haven't talked about the voiceover
We didn't talk about the voiceover.
The only thing, now, out of this entire thing, the one thing that I noticed is Chewbacca's eyes. They look different. Everything else looks perfect.
Okay.
I'm looking at Chewie, and I don't know if it's darker or smaller or something. There's something about the eyes in the head that makes Chewie look a little bit... He actually looks younger.
Huh, okay.
And a lot of people were sitting there going, Chewie, do you have some work done? Because he does look younger.
I guess that did not register with me
I see some gray on his shoulder.
Yeah.
But you look at his eyes. I don't know if they're closer together or they're smaller or something, but there's something. Or maybe it's the way the light's hitting his face.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It did not even register to me at all.
All right, now let's talk about the voiceover.
Okay.
It's Luke Skywalker.
Mm-hmm.
The Force is strong in my family.
Mm-hmm.
My father has it.
Has it.
My sister has it. You have that power too. Or my father has it, I have it, my sister has it, you have that power too. Now, it has been confirmed that this is audio lifted from Return of the Jedi.
As well as recording.
Mark Hamill. See, because when you listen to it, there's a reverb. There's an echo.
Yeah.
That's new.
Right.
Hamill, the actual dialogue there where Mark Hamill is saying, you know, my father has it, I have it. All of that's lifted from Return of the Jedi.
In a different order.
Yeah, it's been cut and pasted, sure. Mm-hmm. But the echo is new. Hamill recorded that part new, but this is not new. So when everybody sits there and goes, my father has it? There's present tense? What? Huh? What? So, no, everybody relax. This is just, it's pulled from the old movie.
Sure.
So there's no reason to believe that Darth Vader has suffered a comic book death. He's actually still dead.
As far as we know.
Well, I mean, the skull is still inside the burned out mask.
Evil never dies.
Well, and a lot of people are thinking that Kylo Ren is actually Darth Revan.
Yeah, there's some interesting speculation about
because of the way he looks.
Right. I there's so many different ways. And it's unlike Star Trek. Star Wars has built up such an expanded universe. I mean, there's an expanded universe for Star Trek. There's a huge number of novels and all that, and comic books and all that stuff.
And some of it's pretty good.
Some of it's very, very good. But Star Wars had this big, you know, because there was never any expectation we were going to get another movie.
Yeah, it was done. It was gone.
So you had all this stuff going into the future, going into the future of the characters. That the instinct is to look at some of these characters and go, oh, that's going to be, mm-hmm. you know, and
there's nothing that said that he's not.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, he is. Right.
Although the character design looks a lot
there's,
like him.
There's some, yeah, there's definitely some of that there. So I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. So,
emotions.
I had so many, you posted
the story for the site and then I shared it on Facebook and I had so many people that I knew of our age mm-hmm. who were like, yeah, I cried too.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, and I teared up four or five times I watched it because mm-hmm. I knew what's coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, but still it does. It does grab you at the 7-year-old and say,
and that's kind of a cool thing. That's you know, the fact that because like I said, you don't expect to have that again. You don't expect to, you know, we're talking about Jurassic World. It is almost impossible to recapture that moment from the first Jurassic Park.
Oh yeah,
where it's a dinosaur.
When they climb up out of the Jeep,
mm-hmm.
yeah. and there's that shot
because the special effects were finally there.
Mm-hmm. It was new,
and the shot was framed perfectly, and everything. I mean, the buildup, you'd had it, and the music swelled, and all those things, mm. and you felt it. In a way that...
See, and half of that is Spielberg.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Spielberg was a master of that.
But at the same time, it's you know, now I can build a dinosaur on the laptop in front of me. You know?
Theoretically.
Theoretically. I don't have the software on the computer to do right. that right now, but I could get it, and I could put it on right. here, and I could build a dinosaur, and I could be in 3D, and I could make it run. The technology has gone leaps and leaps, and, you know, incredibly... The advances are incredible, so it's really, really hard to ever expect that moment again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and so you know, so yeah, it's just
I think for me, if we get a Star Wars movie that's anything remotely close in style,
mm-hmm.
pace, mm-hmm. tone. To the first one or Jedi, I think we're going to be fine. I don't want it to be dark like Empire because that's your second act.
Right.
You have to go dark for your second mm-hmm. act, and I think whatever is next,
sure,
is where it goes, you know, off the rails and gets worse.
Or
because if we're looking at if any of the rumors involving a certain particular someone are true.
Mm-hmm.
Then the way this movie ends will take us into that dark second act.
Right. And I think that it's really going to be...
And you know what? I hate knowing that it's even just out there as a rumor. You know, and part of that is this is what we do.
Right.
You know, we come across all this information. Half of it's true. Half of it's crazy. Half of it's done. You know, we don't know. There's no way to know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just... knowing that it even might be true, it kind of spoils it a little bit. I'm like, I don't really want to know that. Now I can't unsee it. I can't unread it.
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Sure,
I can't unlearn what I've learned about this movie. And if it's true, there are going to be a lot of people upset at the end of this movie.
Yeah.
But we can't. Rogue One looks interesting.
Yes.
We don't have any kind of a trailer or anything, but we did get a synopsis out of Celebration talking mm-hmm. about what it's going to be about. And I'm telling you, I posted on Twitter, Felicity Jones is Brea Theron. That's one I want to see.
Okay,
and
sure,
for
sure,
any
sure.
of us, uh-huh. any of you who have read Anne Crispin's Han Solo trilogy, you know who I'm talking about.
And if we can get this stuff, well, you know, but how much of the, again, expanded universe, how much of it's going
to
come
I know,
over?
But I think it would be a good, I think it would be a good nod to Ann Crispin.
Sure.
I think it would be just to acknowledge something, because we don't have her any, she's not here anymore. You know, she lost her battle with cancer last year.
Right.
And I think it would be a nice little tribute to her that Felicity Jones would be playing Bria Theron. I think it would be cool. It would be cool.
It would be cool.
Because we didn't see, the thing is, we didn't get, Anne was very smart with this, because the scene that we got was just one little snippet
mm-hmm.
of that mission. And we knew, and we knew she died. We knew Bria Theron died in that mission. Spoilers for any of you who haven't read the book. But it's been out for how long now? But she didn't give us the entire mission. So there's right. still room to tell that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to see. I want to see Bria Theron's story. I want to see Felicity Jones as Bria Theron. And with that, we're going to take a break. We are going long on this one because we're talking about a number of different trailers. When we get back, we're going to talk about Fantastic Four. We're mm-hmm. going to talk about Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about Batman V Superman and Jurassic World right after this message from our sponsor, SuperheroStuff.com. They have all sorts of cool superhero
stuff. Oh, so
it's all
sorts of great things there.
So take a listen here, and we will be back when H2O continues. Stand by.
You're listening to H2O on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Where can you get Age of Ultron stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Justice League stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Doctor Who stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
Where can you get Daredevil stuff?
SuperheroStuff.com.
New items being added all the time. Get your superhero stuff at SuperheroStuff.com. Plus, the Hero Box is back. $70 worth of superhero stuff for only $49. SuperheroStuff.com, where heroes shop.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV, that's our YouTube channel, where we have interviews, convention panel video, and Week in Review, where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
Our transmitters are made from hand wavium. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Back on H2O, Jason Hunt here with Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
And we're in the trailer park this week. We've talked about Star Wars The Force Awakens. Let's talk Jurassic World for a second.
Sure.
What you think?
It looks like fun.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned about... there's the new trailer gives a lot more information about the story. Or at least, you know, gives you the gist of things, right? Sure. And I'm a little concerned that we're going into the... we're taking the hyper-intelligent animal...
Trope.
And running with it in a way which in the trailer does not look like they're treading new ground. Now, not to say this can't be a lot of fun, because it certainly can be. And we're getting that with, you know, giant dinosaur monster creatures. We've got pterodactyls, and we've got, you know...
Wait, there are dinosaurs in this movie?
No, not a single one. It's all a bait and switch. There actually are no dinosaurs in this film.
Nature will find a way.
We have watched all the dinosaur footage, actually, in the trailers. Everything else is just
it's all just hidden movement in the shadows.
That's right. Although I have to say there's a moment in the trailer that I just groaned.
Which part?
The part where the, and hopefully you folks have seen these trailers, because here's the reference point you're not going to get if you haven't seen it.
We should probably link to them.
We should link to them. But there's,
you know, I think I forgot to link to something last week. I'll have to our Wonder Woman articles.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I gotta go fix that.
We so you're going. You've got the team moving through the forest looking for the dinosaur in question, and they find the tracking device and it's ripped it out because it remembered where it was, and it's like a super smart animal. And then you see the guy. And the blood drips down on his hand because no one in the movies ever looks up. Ever. It's just like, and you know, there are times when the two-dimensional thing, the two-dimensional battle plane, the big reveal.
He's intelligent, but inexperienced.
Right. Wrath of Khan. Yes. Great move. Because the realization that's, and if you hadn't thought about it ever, the realization that battles in space would be submarine warfare in many ways. Not, they wouldn't be aircraft. They wouldn't be aircraft. They'd be submarines. And every time, and even Star Trek forgot about that immediately. But there's this great feeling, and you're not going to find that in Star Wars either.
No.
But there's something about that, just, you know, oh yeah, it would be submarine warfare because you've got the three-dimensional, the fact that you can't, you know, you're in real space battles, distance makes a huge, you know, lasers go on forever.
Right.
Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but, and then you have aliens. Where they're all around us. Where are they? I can't see anything. Yeah. Well, there's here above you. But it's become an incredibly huge trope. It's like,
sure, the blood.
The blood drips down. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, they're above us. Nobody in the movies ever looks up. I mean, seriously, you're going hunting for a very large dinosaur,
which would probably...
is not going to be hiding behind that bush.
No, but if, you know, depending on its size, it could be an easy assumption to make that it won't climb.
Yes, but at the same time,
you know, I mean,
but the thing is
give
that
it the benefit of the doubt here.
But. No, okay, but still, and here's a spoiler for a J.J. Abrams film. If you have yet to see
Cloverfield,
which is about 50% really good movie. And
you're going to give it that much?
I'm going to give it 50% really good movie. Oh, it's got a lot of problems, but everything where you don't really know what's going on is just really, really great. And the first reveals of the monster and all this stuff, but an entire film, the ending of that movie where apparently giant creatures can tiptoe through Central Park.
Because they can. Yeah, because Godzilla 98 told us that.
Oh,
right?
Exactly. And we all knew that Godzilla 98 was supposed to be the guideline of everything being following.
Sky.
Yeah, exactly. So other than that, it looks like fun. It really does look like fun. It looks like
it looks like they've captured the feel of the first one. Because the second one and the third one, they kind of went a little awry.
Well,
the first one, you had that idea of this being, you know, like we said, you know, it's the first time you see the dinosaurs. It's that sense of awe and that.
Well, and the first one was this is a new thing. This is a new technology. This is a way. Yeah. This is the opportunities are endless. And then the second one was. Perhaps the opportunities should not be applied.
Right.
And the third one, I'm actually one of like apparently the five people who enjoyed the third one because the third one's just a chase movie. It's,
sure.
If you look at it and just think of it as a chase movie, it's very, very fun. But it's not, there's no depth to it, right?
Right.
But it's just fun. It's just, oh, dinosaurs chasing. Wah, run. Ah, okay. Yeah. You know. Now
and
this
always
one,
run in a straight line.
Exactly. Well, again. I saw it in a movie, so it must be true. But this looks like taking the first one and running with the idea of what happens when all that amazing new stuff becomes old hat.
Yeah, you start to take it for granted.
You take it for granted. And
it's just normal
and that's,
stuff.
And you hear it in the trailer talking about, well, every time we introduce a new thing, you know, attendance numbers go through the roof. And... so somebody, some bright person in marketing said, we need a new dinosaur. And someone sat there and went, well, we could make one. Beg pardon?
How meta does that seem, though? Because that really could apply to Hollywood at this point, is because every time whilst we go bigger, mm-hmm. the audience comes in. I mean, you look at, because what was it earlier? Early discussions Joss Whedon was having about the sequel to Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking he was going to go smaller and a little bit more character focused. And he's like, oops.
Yeah.
And there's still the focus on character, and there's still a lot of that,
mm-hmm.
but the actual story itself got bigger. And,
sure.
And reviews, early reviews of this is kind of mixed. It's not overly enthusiastic in saying, oh, this is just the best Marvel movie ever. People are still saying that about the Winter Soldier. They're not saying about it Age of Ultron yet.
Well, I think, and you and I have talked about this, is the fact that I think one of the things that made Winter Soldier work is that it's not a superhero film.
No, it's a political thriller.
It's a political thriller with superheroes.
Yeah.
And I think that if Marvel, anybody making a superhero film needs to remember that very few really good superhero stories are about superheroes. They're about the person.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why Alien works so well, is because it's not a science fiction film.
Mm-hmm.
It's a monster movie.
Right.
And it's a scary monster movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just happens to be in space.
Right. It's a haunted house story in space.
Yeah.
And it's an H.P. Lovecraft haunted house story in space.
So cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that you end up with stuff that if you are... And having just talked about a Star Wars movie with its own with the thing, right?
Yeah.
So there are exceptions to the rule, but I think that superhero films they benefit, because otherwise you end up with, I mean, Batman and Robin was a superhero film. It's a film about superheroes and supervillains.
Batman and Robin was a toy commercial.
That as well, but yeah. I mean, it's not. Then you look at Captain America. You look at Winter Soldier, you look at the first Avengers, they're films about characters who happen to be superheroes.
Yeah.
And I think that if that's not a bad model to play with if you're going to play in that world.
No, I agree. I think if you're going to do that, you have to look at them as people first,
mm-hmm.
and the relationships that they have with each other first. And then, oh, by the way, they just happen to have all of these powers and abilities beyond those immortal men.
Right. Which actually is not a bad place to segue into Superman 5, Batman.
You did it.
Yeah, except I also flipped it around entirely.
That's
there
true.
Too. Because I think this is something that it's really easy to say DC as opposed to Warner Brothers, because there is a distinction. Because right now DC is doing kind of interesting things over Convergence that I don't know where they're going with it.
Did you see the announcement of the girl power initiative that they're doing?
No. Good for them,
we'll
though.
We'll have to talk about that.
Good for them, because 50% of their audience is women. So
how dare they like superheroes?
Recognize that you're actually the people paying the money.
Juicy, there's an article on UpRocks talking about the fact that Black Widow is not part of a lot of the merchandise for Disney for Age of Ultron stuff.
That would not be the first article about that.
Now, I'm reading through all of the comment threads,
sure.
and whatnot, and there's somebody who says he works for Disney, and I looked him up on Facebook, and it does show that he works at Disney.
Mm-hmm.
He says that one of the things that people are not taking into consideration is the fact that in order for Disney to license merchandise with a particular character on it,
mm-hmm.
your talent representation has to agree to it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said there are a lot of them, mostly the actresses, who have representatives who feel like they don't want to oversaturate the market with this person's face, what all on a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that plays a factor in whether or not you get a bunch of Black Widow, Pepper Potts, Gamora, who, you know, take your pick, flavor of the month. That has an effect on what merchandise can go out with certain characters on it. But it's also been pointed out that all of this Age of Ultron stuff, a majority of it, doesn't have Hawkeye on it either. It doesn't have any of the new guys. You know, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, they're not on any of the stuff.
Right.
Of course, right now, they're not Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are on the shirts and the lunch boxes, the backpacks, and all that other stuff.
Are the ones that are on movie series?
They're the ones. Well, there is that, but they're also the ones with powers.
Yeah.
They're not the normal, because Black Widow and Hawkeye, for all of the skills that they have, they're normal human beings. They're agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
They are not superheroes.
Right.
In that sense of, you know, powers.
Sure.
Whether that plays into it or not, mm-hmm. I don't know. But, you know, I would imagine that Disney's been doing this for long enough. They've got some things called sales data and market research.
You would think so, but you and I both know. You and I both know how hard it is to convince these folks that 50% of their audience is women.
I know, but having an audience as 50% women doesn't necessarily mean that that 50% is going to be buying everything that you try to sell.
Sure, but at the same time, I would knowing very well that kind of stuff for representation definitely happens. Every single woman involved with this process, every single female character involved with the Marvel Universe, these folks are.
I'm not saying this, but I'm saying this that was the. One of the things, and I'm sure that it's a huge mix of a lot of different factors that play into this.
Right.
But I don't know that even I had thought about that, because you do have to realize, because you remember what Carrie Fisher said. She makes the joke, every time I look in the mirror, I gotta send George Lucas a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole thing about images.
Right.
When you have an actor playing a character, and that character then becomes your face on all the stuff,
mm-hmm.
that costs money.
Oh, sure.
And you have to have a legal agreement that allows you to do that kind of thing. And I don't think a lot of people are taking that into consideration. But that's a topic for another time.
That is a topic for another time.
Because we've got to talk about trailers.
Well, yeah. So back to this is the thing about Batman versus Superman, whatever it ends up being called by anybody, it'll be being called Batman versus Superman. And is that we've... And we'll talk about what I actually saw in the trailer here. But the thing is that the first film, Man of Steel, is basically the story of an orphan who's been adopted.
Right.
Okay. It's an adoption story. It's a I don't know who I am. I've been, you know, there's all these different things, and there's a lot of Clark Kent being uncertain in that film.
Sure.
And then you bring in, you know, we're your people, and we're bad guys, and all these different things, and we're setting the DC, the Warner Brothers DC universe is set in this world, our world.
Yes.
Not in the kind of almost our world that Avengers is set in and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but they're setting it in our world, in a way which is really risky. I think
sure.
The benefits are there, but it's very risky because
I don't see any benefits yet.
Well, that's it. We're on one film.
Right.
We got one movie. You can't. So, but the thing is that
a whole universe in one film.
One of the big difference between Jonathan Kent in Man of Steel versus any other version of Jonathan Kent is that they played Jonathan Kent as a man who lived through Watergate and Vietnam. And the Patriot Act and Edward Snowden. There's a, you know, it's so clear that this guy is reacting to the world that we lived in.
Yeah.
That we lived through. And if you realize your son is from another planet,
mm-hmm.
and you think about what that's going to mean. So there's a lens that they're filtering Man of Steel through, which is a really risky one, because if you look at our world, if you sit there, if you read the newspaper, go on the internet, all these things, it's really easy to get depressed about the world we live in.
Oh, yeah.
And we want, especially characters like Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, we want this sense of inspiration. We want this. And I think that if you set it in this world, our world, the one, you know, that kind of built-in grimdark. Everyone talks about how grimdark it is. Well, I got news, kids. You know, turn on the TV. That's the risk, is that you then have to work extra hard to bring the inspiration part. And that's not within the, of course, the big complaint about Man of Steel is that it's not remotely inspirational.
Right.
So
it's not fun,
but I'm watching the trailer for Batman versus Superman. And it's a good chunk of it's voiceovers.
Yeah.
And I'm listening, and Holly Hunter in there, and I'm listening to it going, Oh, yeah, that's exactly it. That's, I mean, that puts the first film in perspective in a way, because even just listening to the dialogue, they're talking about what we would be saying if all of a sudden we had a Superman.
Yeah.
Because there's, I guarantee you, having met humanity in my 40, almost 45 years, there's the amount of distrust,
The
amount of fear would be huge.
Especially on the internet.
Oh, God, yeah. But the thing is that this other thing that occurred to me is that we may have already seen this story.
Oh?
Yeah.
Pray tell.
Marvel and DC have at various points written versions of the other guy's characters, right?
Right.
So Marvel had the Squadron Supreme.
Oh,
which
right,
was essentially
right.
a pastiche of the Justice League. A few years ago, 10 years ago maybe now, they wrote a series called Supreme, which took, and it's set in its own little reality. It took the characters from Squadron Supreme and put them in the real world. And ask yourself the question, do you really want a Superman in the world? Do you really want possibly an immortal goddess walking around? Do you want an incredibly rich guy who basically runs around dressing like a creature of the night? Do you want, you know, all the issues that could, I think the first arc of it was really, really good because it was kind of disturbing. Because it answered, but there's another one. There's another series that came out not too long ago about the villain's name was the Plutonium, Unredeemable, Invincible, I think maybe.
Yeah.
But their Superman analog loses his mind. He goes insane and basically applies. And of course, DC did their video game.
Injustice, Gods Among Us.
Gods Among Us. So it's not necessarily new ground tread, right. But at the same time, I think that if this is what they're doing with Batman versus Superman, and this is the world they're building, if there's somebody at Warner Brothers, somebody at DC who's sitting there going, overarching plan, we have an overarching plan, we swear to God, there's actually a plot to this. If there is, then what they ought to be doing, especially since you're looking at, we're looking at four films, right? Yeah. So you got the, Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman.
And that leads to Justice League.
That leads to Justice League. Is Justice League a two-parter?
I don't know that for
I don't
sure.
know if it is. I can't remember if I say it.
It's possible.
I know the Avengers.
Split.
Avengers.
Infinity War.
Infinity
is
Wars
be two.
Too. Yeah. Okay, so maybe I'm thinking of that. But anyway, that's your arc. That's your arc for those three films. If it is just three, is you have established the world with Man of Steel.
Right.
Expand the world with Batman versus Superman.
Now with more Batman.
And then the third one is. That's your hope. That's your point where you sit there and you know you inspire the characters to become, you know.
So, hope and change in the third one.
I'm saying it's a possibility. However, if you've seen the close up the little walk around with the costumes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That is a much brighter Superman costume.
Yes, it is.
And so I'm very curious to see if we get that, if that's where we start or that's where
Wonder Woman's costume is brighter.
It is much brighter. And
than what you see in the promo photo.
Right.
Now, granted, we haven't seen her in any footage.
Right.
But it does play to the online discussion talking about how Zack Snyder desaturates everything. And his pastiche, his visual palette, doesn't have color in it.
Well, but I think it also becomes this real question of our, you know, promotional material versus what we're actually going to see. I mean, because there's something real dramatic
but
about
that. But
we've
seen Man of Steel.
Yeah,
we've seen Man of Steel.
There is actually color in Man of Steel, but
not a lot.
No, it's not a lot.
And I don't like it.
Well,
it's bland. It's dark. It's cold. It's.
Well, so maybe again, not having any reason to suspect this it's the kind of thing that if you really want to tell this kind of story. It gets brighter. The colors actually get brighter because you're.
Yeah, that's. I don't see. I don't. I don't have a lot of faith that Snyder's doing that.
See, not jumping on the Snyder is awful bandwagon.
I know what I'm saying,
but everybody's doing it.
I've not been impressed with anything that I've seen from Snyder except Watchmen.
And
Watchmen was, here's a book, let's here's our storyboard.
The film that he broke out of was Dawn of the Dead, okay, which was a remake, and it was actually the first zombie film in a really long time that was actually any good.
Wow, still,
and it was also not a direct remake because it's very, very different from the original film. Same basic idea, but far from a direct remake.
Yeah,
Watchmen is probably the best adaptation we could hope for. And considering how many people thought that was an unfilmable story.
Sure. And I give him his props for that.
I mean, it's not a perfect film based
imagination. But you also have to remember, too, Watchmen is very grim dark, like Man of Steel is. It's almost like that's all he knows how to make anymore. Well, because Sucker Punch was the same way.
Well, see, Sucker Punch is such... I often feel really bad about defending that movie. I get what he was trying to do with the story. I think he failed.
Oh, yeah.
But I get what he was trying to do. But you know what? These are also adaptations. Superman, any Superman film is an adaptation.
I'm not arguing that, but I'm just saying if you're going to make a movie about a superhero,
mm-hmm.
See, my takeaway, the fact that the colors were so bland in Man of Steel reduced the amount of emotional involvement that I had.
Well, yeah,
I felt cold to the movie.
I could definitely see that.
Aside from the fact that I was still waiting for Superman to show up when the credits were rolling at the end, I was like, where was Superman in this movie?
Mm.
And I'm worried that we're still not going to have Superman in this next movie. Even if he's on the arc that you're talking about, if you're assuming that if that arc is true...
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to get Superman until the end of the third film.
I think Let me backtrack to something that we've talked about before. Is that I need something out of this movie. I need to have, I got more hope for that even watching this trailer.
Right.
I need to have that confrontation between anybody and Superman.
Right.
I think we're gonna get it from Batman.
It looks like we're gonna get it.
Gonna get it from Batman, and he's gonna be going, you know, basically, people died because of you.
Yeah.
And Superman's going to sit there and say, I know.
You assume.
I'm going to say that it would be a missed story opportunity on a level that I don't think anybody Michael Bay could hit.
maybe Uwe Boll?
No, I think Uwe Boll. Because, you know... No, he couldn't do it either. I was about to sit there and say that Uwe Boll is better than Michael Bay, and Michael Bay has made 1.5 good movies.
Speaking of Michael Bay and Uwe Boll, let's talk about George Miller, because it's in that time frame.
Oh yeah.
You know, the '80s and nineties, nineties. Mm-hmm. You know, because Uwe Boll was making, you know, was cranking them out back then, and that's when Michael Bay was doing all his stuff before Transformers.
Sure.
And we got George Miller and the legacy trailer for Mad Max.
And it's a wonderful reminder that I think I don't know how many people actually get that the guy directing, I mean, we know, mm-hmm. but I mean, how many people actually get that?
This is the guy.
This is the same guy.
Yeah, it's the guy who made the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what's interesting to me is that we see... In this trailer, we see Mel Gibson's Mad Max and Tom Hardy's Mad Max, and it's the same character.
Oh, I don't think there's any.
I mean, this film, this trailer was made for the Mad Max fans.
Oh,
it's
sure.
not made for the general public, because people are going to look at it and go, "What's Mel Gibson doing in this movie?"
Yeah,
it's like, wait, Mel Gibson's in this movie? But I think this is that film, this is that trailer that says, this is your grandfather's Mad Max movie. You know, this is the movie that your dad used to watch, or your mom. Yeah. This is it's going to be okay. Because we've done it before.
Well, and I think when a lot of people recognize that this film feels very much like a Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is a good thing, in the context of a Mad Max story.
Did you catch they included some scenes from Thunderdome, but mm-hmm. no Tina Turner? Everyone's like, where was Tina Turner? Again, that goes back to the whole licensing thing.
I'm pretty sure that the folks who own Thunderdome can whatever clip they want. But the thing is that ultimately
it's about Max. Yeah.
And oh wow, to see that car again. So it's there's something about it.
It's almost the same as the Star Wars movie.
Kind of the emotional attachment.
That nostalgia factor is really in play in both of those trailers.
But it's done right. It's done right, not in a way that we feel like, we can make some money off of your nostalgia.
Right.
They're going to make some money off our nostalgia.
Oh, sure, I mean, sure.
But both
trailers really do hit the right notes to establish the connection with the past in a good way.
Right. And I think
that's going to play well for both of those films.
Well, and I think especially it's important for something like a Mad Max movie because you've recast the lead.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, and it's been so long since Thunderdome.
Right.
Who around in the general public knows who Mad Max is?
Well, yeah. Well, if you're of a certain age, and you were a teenage boy,
yeah.
I mean, Mel Gibson was not a star yet.
Right.
That was his.
His breakout.
And he was dubbed by a different actor in the American release.
Really? Yeah. I did not know that.
His Australian accent was far too thick for American ears.
Was it?
No. It was perfectly fine, but the American studio decided that we can't have that.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. So the explosion of you know, his popularity, but no, or his crash and burn,
right.
had not happened yet. And it was an interesting time because, you know, this was also the time games were inspired by Mad Max,
mm-hmm.
that Car Wars.
Oh, I remember Car Wars. I played Car Wars.
Exactly. And folks, for those of you at home who have no idea what we're talking about, it's very, very inside baseball. If you're familiar with that term, it's where inside baseball is where you're throwing up all the stats and all this stuff. You know, it's like, and everyone around you sits there and goes, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
But if you were a science fiction fantasy fan in the 80s, mid 80s, and right after Mad Max came out, mm-hmm. There was Car Wars, which was essentially it was Road Warrior. It was essentially the war where you built your own car, and it was a dice game, and Starfleet Battles was after that,
right?
There was Dungeons and Dragons,
Top Secret.
Oh wow,
What
was the big space one before?
Before Starfleet Battles, there was, Starfleet Battles was the first one,
No,
wasn't it?
there was another one.
I don't remember.
We're going to have to do a show on some of these old games because in interesting, video game culture, the stand-up video game, the arcade games, arcade culture is making a return.
Came out of that.
But it's also making a return now.
Yes. Yeah.
And some of these games have never gone away. I mean, Dungeons and Dragons clearly still has an audience with some cash because they're putting out new editions all the time. And plus the book tie-ins,
there's all sorts. I mean,
so we're going to have to talk about some of these 80s games and things like that at some point. But it's just there's something about these kind of movies that if you were there at the time, then you're just like, oh. And even Thunderdome, which is very much in many ways, it's a much more
90s movie.
Well, it's definitely 90s movie, but it's also a more general audience friendly movie.
Yeah.
It's much more a film. It's kind of a film for the first fans of Mad Max to take their kids to, kind of.
I can see that, but I also see that Thunderdome was probably the first Hollywood Mad Max movie.
Definitely. It was.
And it kind of makes me wonder. You look at the Mad Max series. You look at Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Alien. You look at Star Wars, and the first movie of all of these franchises,
Terminator.
They were low budget films.
Mm-hmm.
They were small, quote unquote, small independent films. They were they were nothing films.
Yeah. And kind of expected to fail.
Yeah, you get something like then Aliens, which was a lot more money put into it, a lot more cash and prestige and whatnot.
Sure.
And then of course you have the Star Wars movies and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does the Hollywoodization, if that's a word, corrupt the original idea to the point where it's just a pastiche of itself? And I think that's what we saw a little bit with the prequel trilogy in Star Wars. Is
I don't even
let's throw a bunch of money in it and the story is
good. I still maintain that was really just a case of George Lucas not having someone next to him saying don't do that. But no, I think what you end up with is when you have something like the Terminator films or any of these things. The first one is made by people who are, they have no expectations. They're making a series. They're just trying to tell a really good story. Right. They've only got so much money. And so they're going to make the best film they can make. And so we've done independent film for a while. When you don't have any money, you got to be creative.
Oh yeah, yeah. Limited resources is one of the best things you can have independent film.
I'm not going to say that there's anything wrong with someone saying, "Well, here's $10,000, go make your short film." Yeah. Okay,
and if anybody wants to give us money,
exactly, go fund your podcast for 6 months. But of course, it's those first films, those facts that they are labors of love. They don't have the net, the safety net. And a lot of times it's when you look at these other films, they've moved away from the creative team of the first film.
Right.
You don't have the same writers. You don't have the same, and there's something to be said, and not to say you can't stumble. You can have the same writer stumble, because it happens, certainly. But there's times when going with that original author, the original writer, original director, and some directors are not designed for big budgets. There are some directors who you do not wish to give large sums of money because they don't know how to spend it properly.
And that leads us into our last trailer that we can discuss because there are concerns about Josh Trank being given a bunch of money
to do
Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
Because he's going to do a Star Wars film.
But they are a little bit mitigated for me with this trailer.
You think?
Yeah, because honestly, it's very much Ultimate Fantastic Four. In fact, it's all Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Because the fact that they're going through dimensional portal, that's Ultimate Fantastic Four. The fact that they're essentially teenagers in their college age, that's Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Right.
In fact, if they stay away from Dr. Doom having hooves, as he did in Ultimate Fantastic Four, I'll be okay with that. I'll take the blogger versus
is he a resident of this other dimension?
He's part of the program.
Still part of the program.
He's part of the program. But he's transformed in a way which makes him far less human in Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Now the interesting thing that they're not going to do with this movie, let's say it takes off, people sit there and go, "Oh, this is a really cool take," and they get lots and lots of sequels. They are never going to go with what happened to Reed Richards in the Ultimate Line, where he becomes the villain.
Yeah,
and I thought that was really kind of interesting. I wouldn't have gone there, but I think that's really kind of cool.
That reminds me.
Yeah,
some people think that there's an Easter egg in Daredevil that hints at the other Spider-Man.
It's entirely possible.
Because in the episode Murdoch, what's Foggy's last name? Nelson. Nelson versus Murdoch. Mm-hmm. I think it's episode 9. I'm not going to get into it because spoilers.
Yeah.
But
too good not to watch on your own.
There is a flashback to when they were at the big lawyer firm.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And Foggy walks into the room and mentions, "Hey, I just bumped into Morales."
Right.
And everybody goes, because apparently, and I've got to check this up and make sure. Miles Morales' parents
mm-hmm.
were lawyers at a really big, prestigious New York law
firm.
You
know what? That would be awesome. That'd be fantastic. That was a Easter egg.
So that was one of those little, everybody thinks that there was a Morales Easter egg. And I still think that there's room in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for two Spider-Mans.
Oh, I think there is, too. I think that the thing is you have to establish one in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
And since I hear we're not getting another origin story.
No, he'll be already fully formed high school Peter Parker Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But you have to have Peter Parker Spider-Man in order to have any of the legacy characters after that, whether it's Spider-Gwen or Miles Morales or any of those.
Yeah,
you still have to tell that
story.
Yeah,
I think you either, if you're going to tell Peter Parker's story, yes. If you're going to just bring in Miles Morales on his own.
Well, what reason does he have to be
Spider-Man? Well, because it doesn't. He would be the very first Spider-Man. There would not be.
Right, but why would he be Spider-Man?
Because Miles Morales in this new movie universe. There would have not have been a Peter Parker, so he would be the. So, but that's not what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, that's how you bring in Miles Morales without Peter Parker. Is you sit there and go, who? No,
right.
I don't know anybody like that. This is Miles Morales. He's Spider-Man, and we go.
Which would not go over very well with a lot of fans.
I don't think it would, but at the same time, it would not necessarily go over with. The hardcore fans. I think with the hardcore fans, who are actually the ones who actually know who Miles Morales is,
yeah.
would sit there and go, okay, because we'd already gotten five Peter Parker movies.
Yeah.
Okay? And you might either, you like them, or you don't, or you sit there and go, okay.
I think the Spider-Man movies, you can like pieces of them. Those movies you can like pieces without.
There are three, I'd say three out of the five films are really pretty good.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the last film of both runs isn't just stop stuffing everything in. Unless it works. I mean, you got to figure out how to make it work. There's a balancing act. For the love of God, there's a balancing act. Okay.
And we're going to stop stuffing everything into this one because we're pretty packed at this point. Okay, so five trailers all drop in a span of less than a week.
Oh, yeah.
Which one are you most excited about?
I'm most excited about Star Wars for a couple of reasons. One, it's close. It's within the year.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Age of Ultron is next month.
Next week.
It is next week.
Yeah.
Wow. Yes. So we got that. That's exciting. But Star Wars, there's an emotional attachment to Star Wars. We've talked about this. It's important.
Yes.
There's something to us. It's a kid thing. It would be like seeing a Superman film that reminded me of Christopher Reeve. And that's impossible.
And I think...
It's impossible. You can't have it.
Yeah.
The fact that you can have it with Star Wars...
But I think the other thing with the Star Wars movie is you've got so many of us in our generation of fans
mm-hmm.
who were so disappointed in the prequels.
There's even more
hope that they get it right.
You're breaking my heart, man. When the girl you love breaks your heart that bad...
Mm-hmm.
And you think there's no chance again you could ever love again.
Yeah.
And then...
Her twin sister shows up.
And you're like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
That's the one. I mean, I have to admit, all of them...
All of them look interesting.
They all look
good. And some of them look really good. Some of them are like, okay.
I think if I had to rate them in levels of excitement right now, it's going to be Star Wars, Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm just by the fact that they're going in the direction I want them to go. Batman versus Superman, Jurassic World is such a.
See, I'm looking forward to that more than I am Batman versus
Superman. Sure. And I want to say the problem is Fantastic Four is. We still don't have enough. And the marketing campaign has not reached a point where they're like, okay, we got to really make you want to watch this film.
Yeah.
And they're not there yet. But yeah, Star Wars.
Okay, if you have a favorite of those, if you've got one of those movies that you are eagerly anticipating more than others, you can leave us a comment or you could send us an email H2O at scififorme.com. You can find us all on the social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Pinterest, YouTube, Google+. And that's
all the places.
All the places. And we do encourage you to check out superherostuff.com for your superhero merchandise. They've just added a bunch of Age of Ultron stuff. And you can take a look at what they've got and tell them Sci-Fi for Me sent you.
Yeah.
And that's going to do it for us. We're going to wrap up. And next week, maybe we'll talk about 80s games. Who knows?
Yeah.
All right. For everybody here at Sci-Fi for Me Radio, I am Jason Hunt. And you are...
I am Timothy Harvey.
And we will be back next week. Thanks for listening, folks.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.